Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is our friend. We should name him the sort of almost permanent guest on the show, Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be here.
Well, it's great to see you here. You know, you really do need your own radio show. I had a predictions column last week in which I predicted, I don't know if you saw it, that you should get the honor of having the top story this year because of the story you wrote, which I thought was magnificent about how the Cuomo people were calling in the plays for their own Moreland Act Commission, which was supposed to be independent.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I'm sure it caused you no end of grief. So if you look back on this last year, what jumps into your mind?
I guess I go to the governor, who was riding so high for so long. He had such an extended honeymoon period the first 2 years.
Sure.
He went into his third year. He was up 70% in the polls, approval ratings. And he really, this was the first year we saw the cracks, the inevitable cracks. He started off strong. He got his SAFE Act, you know, the gun control law following. He wanted it to be the first one in the nation following the Sandy Hook shootings. But it also was a turning point for him because it really alienated a lot of gun owners upstate in particular. And it, in a way, it freed the Senate Republicans who really had been doing anything he asked them to do, including allowing the gun law to make it to the floor, including same-sex marriage in 2011, legalizing it. But this bill really alienated the Republican base, and the relationship between Cuomo and the Senate Republicans wasn't the same after that.
Let's stay on the gun law. I find it very interesting. I have a regular correspondent who excoriates me all the time because of my views on guns, which are, I think, what the governor did, whatever his political motivations, because he's a smart guy, was very gutsy. And he took the heat that came with it. Now, I think I heard a hint in what you just said, that he may have done it in a reactionary fashion. In other words, he may have been reacting to the terrible Connecticut.
Oh, he absolutely was in the shooting upstate around Christmas time. He absolutely was. And it was very important to him. Don't forget it. As we entered the year, we still didn't know what Hillary Clinton was thinking. I mean, technically, we still don't, although most people think she's going to run in 2016. So the feeling was he really wanted this in particular, not only because he believes in it, but because he wanted it first. He wanted to go out there and say, we were able to respond to this gun tragedy in Connecticut faster than Obama, faster than anybody, and we did it with a bipartisan legislature. That was very important to him. And the truth is, he had built his popularity up among Republicans, among upstaters, you know, just across the state, where, as I said, he was above 70% approval rating.
Sure.
You do that so you have the political power to be able to make get a tough bill like that passed.
Yeah,
you know, if he was in the 50s, there's no way that bill would have passed.
Right. Now,
let's
go to the Senate, because I'm fascinated by that. The New York State Senate, of course, should be, by the old tradition, Democratic, but it's not, because the four dissidents, led by Jeff Klein of the Bronx, attached themselves to the Republicans. There was real dissonance between those four and the leadership of the Senate. And frankly, some of that involved, I think, ethnic politics. I can't prove it, but it's my sense of that. And the governor, of course, is in a better spot because those people are there putting on the brakes in the state Senate. Now, you said before that you thought that he had lost his power over those Republicans. But those Republicans are in a bad spot right now.
They are in a bad spot. However, right now they are more afraid of Michael Long, the state party, the state conservative party,
or the Tea Party,
or the Tea Party, and the base, the Republican base, and so what you ended up seeing they did allow the gun law to get to the floor, but all the other progressive, quote-unquote, more liberal legislation, whether it was the
campaign finance,
the women's agenda that included a strengthening of the abortion laws, decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana, none of that passed, and that was the governor's main agenda. The governor had tacked left at the state of the state. He had run in the middle, and he governed in the middle the first 2 years, and some would say more middle to right the first 2 years. This year he definitely tacked left, and he got very little to show for it as a result.
By the way, for those who don't sail, it means you're moving the boat to the left or the right.
Yes.
Okay. Here's an interesting factoid I heard. I'm sure you've heard it too. That some of the Democrats who have allowed the Republicans to stay in office by organizing with them, those four, are worried about their own primaries that they might lose.
Yeah, there's concern. Look, they took a lot of heat from the governor in recent weeks, and they've taken a lot of heat from the progressive liberal wing of the party. The bottom line is they are still registered Democrats, and they realize they're going to have to. They took heat for blocking, for being in power, for being co-leaders of the Senate, but not being able to get these Democratic achievements through. Now, they would argue they got a lot through. They would argue that they helped shepherd the gun law through. They would argue they got some other stuff through. But the major pieces people were looking for the rest of the session did not get through, despite them claiming to support it. Now, they will argue, and rightfully so, that even if it got to the floor, there weren't enough votes even within the Democratic conference to pass a lot of these things.
Now, here's something that I have heard from a very, very good top source in New York State, and that Klein is getting so concerned about his own status because he's a Democrat in the Democratic Bronx, and he's gone over to he's made a common cause with the Republicans, that we're hearing he may want to run for Congress and get out. Have you heard that one?
I've heard different things about Jeff Klein. He's big on raising money. I've heard Congress. I've heard Attorney General, but I don't think that would be feasible against the guy Schneiderman, exactly, unless he went for the Republican line, which
he
the Republicans would welcome him, but that would be a real tough run. We'll see what he does. I mean, it's been really difficult. And now you're seeing by the things they're coming out with, you know, proposals, they're rejecting, in a lot of ways, Governor Cuomo's calls for tax cuts next year. And that's something Jeff Klein always talked about, property tax relief, all this tax relief. But this year they're saying, well, if we have a $2 billion surplus, we should put, you know, $750 million over the next 5 years toward middle-class affordable housing. We should allow for 6 weeks of paid medical and maternity leave, and sick leave. So they are really on the left side of things right now, more to the left than the governor. The big question is, maybe it alleviates the pressure on them for now. You know, Jeff Klein has said he's going to carry Bill de Blasio, the mayor-elect of New York City, his plan to try and raise taxes in the city on the wealthy to pay for expanded pre-K. And these are all things the left wants to hear. The question is, if he can't deliver it, if he can't get the Senate GOP on board, then he's right back in the fire going into the election that he was before.
Let's go to something else in this Christmas season, and that is we are now hearing that Elliot Spitzer, still married, but, you know, obviously a marriage that's over, is dating, for want of a better word, the flack for Bill de Blasio. And it's making the front pages of all the tabs and everything else. What do you make of this?
Elliot Spitzer is still in the news. It's a strange story. Liz Smith, who by all accounts...
L.I.S. Smith,
by all accounts, is a very talented communications person. She worked for the Obama 2012 campaign as a rapid response person. She worked for Elliot Spitzer in his failed run for city comptroller. That's where I guess they started to date. And now she works for Bill de Blasio. Nobody knew they were dating until this week. And it put de Blasio in an awkward situation because he's trying to have a drama-free lead up to his inauguration. And this certainly is not the press he wants.
Well, frankly, I'm a big Elliot Spitzer fan, and I just can't understand why it's anybody's business, but it certainly has made the front pages of the tabs.
You know, I think it's people's business because of who they are, who Elliot Spitzer is, what happened to his governorship, why he had to resign. For those who don't remember, it was a prostitution scandal, which, again, you know, you could argue, well, who cares? But, you know, he broke the laws as governor for doing that. In this case, you have Bill de Blasio. This isn't just anybody. It's Bill de Blasio's chief flack, you know, who is up to become the communications director. There is argument of public interest in it. Now, they could have handled it, I think, better. You know, Elliot Spitz had to do it, say, look, you know, I'm separated from my wife. We're not married anymore. We're heading toward divorce, and who I date is nobody's business.
I agree.
But he didn't do that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm waiting for the time when we see what went on, the personal life of Rupert Murdoch was during his various marriages. You know, I just think it's hypocrisy of the worst kind. Let's go to Donald Trump. You know, he's blowing off his mouth as usual, saying he could build bridges better than the present governor could for far less money. He might run for governor. He might run for president. I think it's all a lot of bushu, but I don't know what you think.
I think the man likes publicity.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Which is no, I don't think that's front page news either, frankly. But no, I mean,
he couldn't get elected anything, could he?
You know, in the culture we live in today, where celebrity trumps, pardon the pun, trumps everything, who knows? But I don't think he'll run. He'll have to, you know, put out his finances. He'll have to, you know, he doesn't want to do that. He likes the lifestyle he has, but certainly he grabs headlines. He's a name. He has name recognition. He has money. If he did want to run, he would certainly give Andrew Cuomo a run for his money, but I just don't see it happening. Though people close to him say he is considering it. He's meeting with more than 30 state GOPers in the second week of January. What I found interesting was, though, you know, again, nobody thinks he's going to run, yet he took a poke at Rob Astorino, the one guy the Republicans are hoping is running, the Westchester County executive,
right,
who he says is a nice guy and a good guy, but he'll never beat Andrew Cuomo.
Now Alan Chartok says the following thing, speaking for himself, never for the station that he works in, but I say, I hope he does run. That would be very good.
Trump or Astorino?
Trump, because I think he'll get his comeuppance.
As a tabloid reporter, I hope he runs too.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about Speaker Silver. Whatever it is, the Speaker maintains his control over his House. There's not a hint that he's going to be kicked out as Speaker. He's going to be the longest serving, if he keeps this up, he'll be the longest serving Speaker ever. And he could stay as long as he wants. But now comes another little scandalette, let's put it that way, up in Buffalo. So tell us about that.
Yeah, there's a Buffalo area assemblyman who apparently at least five of his staffers, very crass come-ons, very crass comments to them, and they filed a lawsuit complaining about sexual harassment. Shelley Silver says he knew nothing about it until he read about the lawsuit, and that he immediately referred it to the Assembly Ethics Committee. Silver, which is a lot different than how he handled previous cases, but now Silver says he won't deal with these cases at all. He'll just immediately push it off to the Ethics Committee, which is what he did here.
Well, he learned something from the last time.
Yeah, from the Vito Lopez scandal, from the Mike Lopez scandal. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he had to learn that lesson. The question is, there always seems to be, he's weakened but still strong, but there's always something hanging over him. You always feel like if one more shoe drops, that's going to be it. I don't think this is necessarily the shoe unless they prove that he knew something. Mm-hmm. But you've got the William Rapfogel situation going on down in the city.
That's the husband of his chief of staff who turns out to be a bit of a crook.
A crook. He stole, he masterminded, was part of a $5 million scheme to defraud the charity he worked for, of which he pocketed $1 million and directed the contribution to campaigns that were friendly to this charity with the rest or some of the rest of the money. So
I'm assuming he goes to the big house.
Yeah, I'm assuming too. And the question is, did Silver know anything? Again, right now there's no evidence to show that he did, but that could be the one that blows up if it does.
I want to go back to the state Senate for a moment, sure, if I can. I've heard a rumor that the governor, as you indicated before, doesn't have the state Senate doing what he wants anymore. So therefore, I've heard a rumor that he is going to support candidates from the Democrats who are running for the state Senate, pick up a few more seats. Then his credentials with the Democrats will be raised because, after all, there's a lot of people who suspect he's kept the Republicans in power.
Well, I think the governor's in an interesting situation. I don't know if he'll come out and say, I want a Democratic Senate, because it is so close, and if he loses out, he's in trouble. What his MO has been is to get involved in races that are kind of easy races to get involved with. So I wouldn't be surprised if he endorses a bunch of Democrats, but they're not going to be in races that are up for grabs in all likelihood. He won't go all out for that. But he's certainly in a different situation than he's been. He has had, at best, a tenuous relationship with the left of the party, even though he's done some things that they love.
No, there's no question.
Same-sex marriage and the guns.
Yeah.
But he's had a tenuous relationship with the left. However, they had nowhere to go, because other than a pocket of lawmakers here and some groups and good government groups there, there was no real organized opposition to what he wanted to do. But now you have a mayor coming in, Bill de Blasio, you know, the mayor of one of the most powerful cities in the world, who is, by all accounts, very liberal, very progressive, and has said he's going to push a progressive agenda. Now he gives a face and a very powerful voice to the issues that everyone else was complaining were being ignored. Does he pull Andrew Cuomo to the left, or does Cuomo end up getting in some tension with him as he tries to stay in the center?
Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller of New York, I'm a big fan of his. But there are those people who have suggested that things are not good between the governor and DiNapoli. And that one of the issues is that DiNapoli has this huge pension fund and all that money to invest. And that Andrew Cuomo is the kind of guy who doesn't like other people to have power. So therefore, that Cuomo may be coming after that board. What have you heard about that?
Well, I mean, this goes back to Cuomo's days as attorney general, when he was investigating the state comptroller's office because of pay-to-play scandals under DiNapoli's predecessor, Alan Hevesy. Don't forget, Alan Hevesy went to jail over this issue. But Cuomo didn't feel DiNapoli was acting quickly enough. He also doesn't like the idea that it's a single person in charge of one of the largest public pension funds in the world. So he has pushed for a board as attorney general. He hasn't done so as much since becoming governor, but the tensions between the two offices are there, particularly the governor toward DiNapoli. Anytime DiNapoli comes out with a critical audit, you know, the blowback is unbelievable.
Of a state agency.
Of a state agency. But it's like someone throwing a rock and then, you know, the governor's office taking a bazooka and shooting back.
So who is Ben Lawsky?
Ben Lawsky, who some people derisively call the comptroller general. He was Andrew Cuomo's chief of staff in the attorney general's office. He's now the head of the Department of Financial Services, which now is auditing aspects of the comptroller's office. It's gotten involved in issues previously only involved by the attorney general. So, you know, people jokingly refer to him as the comptroller general. It's almost like the shadow executive branch. But he's done some good things. He's a powerful man. He's taken on the banks. Some people consider him a future statewide candidate. He's kind of an Andrew Cuomo clone, and I don't know all that entails.
Well, I don't see him as a future statewide candidate, but one of the things you said before really is interesting to me, and that is if Cuomo is making, if he does, says it should be a board and not a single individual. Now, we all know DiNapoli doesn't make each of these investments. He's surrounded by people who give him advice. But if Cuomo has a board, he'll appoint the board, and really, he'll be the comptroller general.
Well, look, you know, Andrew Cuomo is a very hands-on kind of guy. I think DiNapoli is in a stronger footing than he was 4 years
Agreed.
Ago. You know, he won election to a full term. Now he's going up. He's got the unions on his side. The economy's in a better place than it was 4 years ago. So the pension fund is in a better place than it was 4 years ago in terms of value. So I think even some Republicans, top Republicans, have said to me they don't view him as vulnerable as they do someone like Attorney General Eric Schneiderman.
And why is Schneiderman vulnerable?
I think they feel, of all the statewide,
I think he's done a good job, right?
I think they feel he hasn't made a name for himself like Cuomo did as attorney general, like Elliot Spitzer did before him as attorney general.
Yeah.
He hasn't made as big a name for himself. Certainly, he's done some big things. He's this mortgage settlement, the $1 billion that the state's going to be getting, $13 billion settlement overall, he was a big part of. He's gone after racial profiling at some of the high-end department stores in the city. So I think he's getting there. He's had a much better year this year, but he hasn't made a name for himself. The Republicans feel they can taint him or tar him as, you know, a Western, you know, an Upper West Sider who only cares about those issues. So they see him as the most vulnerable. We'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be tough. It's a heavily Democratic state.
Fracking. We going to see it or not?
Is that a prediction you're asking, or not anytime soon you're not going to see it?
Well, the governor is being sued by one of the pro-frackers who says, get off the can and, you know, let us know what's going to happen here and stop stalling. This governor, as far as I'm concerned, has no good reason to support fracking right now in New York.
Well, I think most people, when he came in, thought that it was inevitable.
Yep.
And I think the governor himself was surprised by two things. One was the volume, both the number and the voice, the actual volume of opposition, the high-profile opposition that's been there. And they've really made their case out there, whereas the oil companies said they haven't been able to compete. The other thing I think has been hard on the governor, he says he's not poll-driven, but you know others might suggest otherwise. Mm. And this is an issue that has split New Yorkers. And it you know right now I would say there's a plurality against fracking, you know, but it's not overwhelming. And
but it's passionate.
But it's passionate. And I think he just doesn't know what to do on the issue. It really, of covering him now for 3 years as governor, it's the one issue that he's really dithered on, that like he hasn't taken a position on, that he really doesn't know what to do. And the feeling is he just doesn't want to make a decision until after the election.
Well, is he more likely to support fracking after the election?
I don't know. I really don't know where his head is at on this. My guess is it's going down, but, you know, Andrew Cuomo can surprise you.
Let's talk a little bit about the Moreland Act Commission. We only have a minute. But he appoints this commission to follow the money no matter where.
Just and, not to him.
Well, he's got $30 million in the bank, all right. Yeah. Good point. Will we get any surprises out of this commission? They've done, put out a lot of subpoenas.
They put out that report, and there weren't a whole lot of surprises. It was maybe in a 97-page report, maybe two things that hadn't been already reported by the media. It was a report that a lot of people, especially legislators, say they could have put together by just putting together media clips. You didn't need hundreds of subpoenas and all the investigations. We'll see. I mean, the thinking is that the governor and the commission really want a deal on ethics reform. The governor's already seen to be walking away, even though he denies it, from, you know, that I won't accept an ethics reform package that does not include public financing of campaigns. People feel that he will jettison that if he can get an ethics reform package and wrap this up. He doesn't want to go in an election year warring with the legislature.
He's had a whole bunch of ethics reforms before, and they turned out to be anything but really substantial.
You know, the reality is, and the governor has said this at times, at some point, you blame the people who are being elected. You know, you can't legislate morality. And you can have all the laws on the books, and certainly there needs to be tighter laws, and there should be more disclosure.
Well, other states have tighter laws.
Right, and there should be more disclosure, and you can argue various things. But you also need quality of people. And for whatever reason, we have just seen so many lawmakers willing to break the law. And that's an issue that has to be delved into.
Always amazing. Well, we're out of time. Our guest has been one of our favorites, columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, as always, thanks for coming back and letting us know what's going on. And we really appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
And happy holidays to everyone.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.